see, I think it's just as much a poverty problem as it is a disadvantage problem, as it is a race issue. It just happens that a lot of minorities are disadvantaged and, well, through being forced to stay at that level through history.
Tell me about
Sandy. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person. She's a very caring person. It just stands out all over her. Full of energy. When she did that march here in Venice, she just, I can't remember, did she just come in? And then we went to march, she'd just gotten off the plane, and she says, I'll just freshen up for a minute. And she, you know, she had that lamp. She was sitting. She walked. We walked a good long. Well, those are miles. I don't know if I can walk those. I'd have to condition myself to do that now. Just a very warm person who had a very hard life. And a lot of courage. I guess it's the courage that you admire the most. Very decent people. She had a lot of energy. She was, you know, her help. She had that health problem, and she was so grateful for the way everybody helped her. I remember that surprised me. She didn't feel that she had done such a wonderful thing, and you know, letting them beat her to death and just about losing her life. But of course, people are, you know, it did affect her health. She was never the same person after that, and like I say, she had to wear some kind of a special brace, and she had a very bad limb.
Can you talk more about that? Describe
that. Which part of it? You mean when she came to do the march? Because she came several times.
I was talking about when she was beaten, and that was an attack.
Right. Now,
you were talking about her
baby. Yes, she was beaten in jail. Yes, she was beaten in jail. Well, how much of it can I remember now? I'm trying to think of what brought on that particular arrest. Because she disagreed with the foreman, as I remember. Geez, I should prepare myself a little bit, shouldn't I? She was kicked and beaten in jail. I'm sure she was hospitalized because I'm trying to think what exactly her injuries were, because she did wear a back brace and she didn't have a lamp. And she had to go regularly to New York somewhere for some kind of special treatment. And her health did continue, you know, to fail. Actually, I would say that was the cause of her death eventually, because her health continued to fail. She didn't get any better. There were so many incidents that she talked about that I'm having a hard time separating the specific ones where she was beaten more than one time. The time that when she was really damaged, she was beaten in jail. And there was an argument with the... They were sharecroppers, and she was the timekeeper, had something to do with, I guess she could read and write, and most of the others couldn't do something. With that, now, that was a big problem, but now I can't remember whether that was before she was beaten in jail or if it was over the voter registration that she led the drive. She went ahead and made them register her to vote, and then she was arrested. Well, I guess she was arrested for going to try to vote. I think that was the pattern. And thrown in jail and beaten very severely. But I don't know whether it was more than one beating that did her in, or whether she just was beaten more that time in jail. But she was never herself after that. She was as I say, she wore this brace. We had to help her tie up her brace to put it on. After she had her bath, and she was damaged, her body was damaged. But she said she would do it again. If that's what it took, she would go through that again. as I say, the courage is just unbelievable, and the attitude, and I guess the most shocking thing to me is that she expressed so much, and Martin Luther King expressed too, was love for the people who hated them, you know, love for the people who beat them, that they, you never, that the whole battle was lost when you yourself were full of hate, if you became full of hate, and if you reacted toward them like they were toward you, which I think that right there is the reason for the success of the civil rights movement, is because I think it's very difficult to hate someone who reacts the way that they did, with love, and tries to understand what you're trying to do to them, because Martin Luther King was beaten too many times, and he spent a lot of time in jail. That wasn't the first time that Fannie Lou Hamer had been to jail. I used to have a little history of her whole life. I should have read it before I came to this session, because it kind of runs different. She's a fascinating person to talk to. In fact, we were very inconsiderate. We wouldn't let her stop talking. She was so... She was so tired, and we were sitting, Miss Lewis and myself, and Miss Lewis was one of her older daughters, and I can't remember several other people. And she was sitting on the bed. You know, she wanted to go to bed. She just flown in from Mississippi there. And as long as she would talk, we wouldn't get up and leave. And finally, she says, I just have to get a little rest. We had a little mercy there. We got up and got out of there. But you would never get tired of hearing her talk. And she was telling all these different. And a lot of humor. She joked a lot, too, about, she called those sharecropper bosses little funny names, she had a conspiracy there. But she had a lot of... It just bothered her. There was a lot of poverty, of course, and the lack of education of the people there, the lack of opportunity for education. That's when she was coming up, and the way the people had to work so hard, and then with this sharecropping thing, they were always robbed of their part of the crop, and it was just, it was real sad, but she even made the face, she made us laugh. She could tell these little jokes about the different ones, and not really... racist type of jokes or anything. They were very humorous, real nice. I'm sure it must have been about 12 or 1 o'clock that we sat on the bed and wouldn't let the poor lady go to bed listening to her talk. And she likes to talk too, I guess, because she really didn't throw us out till about 12 or 1 o'clock. And I know she was very tired.
You said she stayed with you
at the home? She stayed, yes, that old chapel. Very much at home in a shack, she told me that. She also stayed with Kane. He had a very nice apartment up in Los Angeles. She came several times. I don't remember. I think she stayed with me twice. She stayed there. I don't know if she stayed in Los Angeles or not. Actually, they liked to stay here with me because they really weren't that safe. No one would be looking for Fannie Hamer at my house. Yeah, she told me that. She would have stayed with me anyway, because I asked her to. She stayed with Kane. Like I said, Kane had a very nice apartment. I just had an old shack over there. She told me she was very much at home.
Who was
Kane Davis. She was the civil rights. Yeah, she's the director of the Kane Post down here. She had a real... In fact, he asked us to stay over there. See, he's a male, of course, and he gave his apartment. He gave her the apartment. He didn't stay there with her. Well, I don't know whether people would think something improper or not, but back at those times, and people like that, it's improper for the male and the female to stay in the same house alone, although, good Lord, I guess Fanny's old enough to be Kane's grandmother, probably. Mother, I know. So, I can't remember. I think Miss Lewis's daughter and someone else stayed there. Really, she was afraid to stay there and talk about herself. She was a real nice person. She didn't want to stay alone. So maybe she told the truth when she said she was at home there at my place. She said, some of the civil rights people stayed with me who were, came to stay with me because they were being hunted, in a sense, you know, that it would have been kind of inconvenient if someone had a mind. And I think that she had been threatened so many times, and then she's a stranger here. And when you do that kind of thing, you never know what twisted mind might decide to do you in, and they had certainly tried. She'd been shot at, as it all, just about everyone I know that works in civil rights had some kind of, you know, I'm talking about prominent, not just us on the picket line, nobody said who we were. Although we were photographing us, someone must have known who we were. Because they used to take, they would come in there and take close-ups of every face on that picket line. I don't know what they were trying to prove. But anyhow, we weren't in any danger of anybody. But I know when Sam Bloss and Peggy came to stay with me, they were very much looking for Sam Bloss, because they never would have thought about looking for him at my house. He was very involved in civil rights. And when he came over here, he just forgot all about the movement. It was really crazy. He suffered a lot. He was beaten a lot. In fact, his head is all caved in to this day. Well, maybe he figured he suffered enough. And he was, I don't know, he was in this building, and the Klan people are the enemy, whoever they are down. They were from Mississippi, right? In the midst of, they worked with Sanity, you know, and say, well, maybe that's how come they came to my house, because somebody probably asked Sanity Lee where they could stay. Anyway, they came to my house anyhow. And, they were, anyway, he was in this building, and he climbed out on the roof and up on a telephone post, and he had to stay up there all night because they certainly, they were searching. And that's, I don't remember, because of his civil rights activity. And they got him out of town, and he came over here, I guess, for everything. Well, he stayed in California. I don't know if he ever went back to Mississippi or not. I think they would have warned out for him for his arrest. He never had any problems after he came over here. I don't know what to say about Sammy Lee Haines. He was an unbelievable human being, I'll tell you that. The fact that she could say she would do it again, like someone that was harmed as bad as she was. A lot of people always ask the questions, well, how can you not hate someone who was, you know, look at yourself, you're all crippled up and... Nope, because she doesn't hate anyone. Because she wasn't happy that she was beaten, but she didn't hate anyone, and I think that's very commendable. I'm not sure how I would feel if you crippled me up and put me in the hospital. I'm not too sure. Or there would be some kind of a big civil rights rally. Yes, she came, that's where she came to Venice at times, she came to Venice. But the time she stayed in Santa Monica, I can't remember why she came. Well, it had something to do, maybe it was something that was happening in Los Angeles, because there was some big thing every week going on all the time. And she led our march here in Venice. That's specifically why she came. That's why she came to Venice. Now, I'm sure she had other speaking. Well, right, she's come for speaking engagements to different places. But she stayed with me one other time when she came to speak for some group. I don't even remember what it was. I don't know if it was a black group or a white group or whatever. But she used to do that. You know, she, I don't remember that. And I don't know if she came for that big... I don't recall her being there for the time that James Meredith now led the march down. That was a voter registration march drive thing that he came for that time. Because he was here a lot too. I don't know how many times I would walk march with him and this and that. Or was it different kind of happenings with him? They have something that a lot of other people don't have, I guess. He stayed in the college when they were shooting all around him, and he went back after he was shot. I don't know what that is that would make you they went there to accomplish something, and they didn't leave until they did, both he and my family didn't hang out.
Did you have a lot of contact with black churches
while you were in Well, most all of these rallies and things were held in black churches, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were very much involved. Reverend Brookings, I guess, more so than, not all the churches were very, and white churches too, Unitarian Church in Santa Monica. There's a white church on, I think it's not, it was on Jefferson, where we used to go for meetings or different things. I mean, we had fundraisings, and I guess I can't even remember all the different things. It was very busy, I remember that. I think it's as busy as I am now. Here at CSO, but it was a different type of thing. Yeah, Martin Luther King spoke at the different churches. I remember on, they have Men's Day or some kind of a man something. Oh, yeah, that's probably what that is out there. No, this is a very sad thing. I think this is the only time Martin Luther King came to Santa Monica, and that was very poorly attended. Yeah, and that was in, '61, yeah. But Santa Monica was never a town that supported anything like that. They brought him to speak there in the, I think that was at the Calvary Baptist Church, if I remember right. And it was very poorly attended. In fact, there were more white people than there were black people there. And, you know, I was really shocked because I was used to, you know, when he came to Los Angeles, you couldn't get within a block of the church that he was inside over the building where they were meeting or whatever. You couldn't. There was the crowds were just all over the place. It was like, you know, 4th of July parade. And I was real surprised because it was very few people came. And, of course, Santa Monica's like that. They never really embraced civil rights. I don't think they have yet, really. You know, their NAC there was Republican. At least they claimed to be. And the time, the first march, and that was, goodness sakes, way into the civil rights movement, Reverend Kyle. From the first Methodist church up in Santa Monica. Now, I can't remember what that particular march was supposed to be for, what brought it all about. But they couldn't have the march. First you had to get a permit, and then they went down to get the permit, and they didn't give permits for that, and you had to observe the traffic signals. And anyway, there was a lot of fuss over it. And I remember I went with him, not just he and I, a whole group of us went to the city hall something over a permit. You had to have a permit to walk down there, you know, for a group to walk down the street. I don't remember what it was now either. And I don't remember what violation brought about this sudden desire to march in Santa Monica. And I remember Reverend Kyle saying, you know, permit or no permit, I'll march. There'll be a march. I may march. I may walk by myself, but there'll be a march. And that was nothing like Los Angeles, but it was pretty well attended. He certainly didn't walk by himself. There was a handful of us there he knew he could depend on. But it was a pretty fair march. And then they finally got a policeman there, so we were supposed to wait at each traffic light. Well, you know, that kills lives of no. So they relented after they saw that he did have a good following, and that was their first. That was their first march. I don't remember where we marched to. I remember we marched past Sears, so we must have started at the city hall. We marched past the Sears store. I do not remember where it ended. It was kind of a short march for what I was used to. But it was very effective, and I hope it brought about whatever we tried to accomplish, whatever Reverend Kyle did. He did try real hard to build something, but he wasn't there too long. I think he left because of his health. I can't remember now. But Santa Monica just, and there are several black churches there, and at that time, I think that was before the freeway went through and moved most of the black people out. There was quite a black population there. But they just never were that active. I see Reverend Kyle tried very hard, and he did conduct the first march in Santa Monica. Now, come to think of it, I don't guess there ever was another one. I'm not aware of it. If there was, it was maybe since then. Maybe some of these fundraisings, you know, run for the Cancer Society or something like that, but never anything that of that nature. I'm going to say there wasn't. I really could be wrong. My memory is not what it should be.
Now, with most of the organizing and the grassroots work that we did in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yes, we were with those two to knock on doors. That was Earl Walters. Well, I'm sure they were doing it in the South. How else would you make contact? And I guess I'm sure the objective was to register them to vote.
What kind of help did you get from the black newspapers?
Oh, very good. I would certainly say very good at that time. Really. I would say very good. I remember. Very good, very good coverage. There were different people. I think it was only the Sentinel at that time. Could be wrong there too, but I think it was. Well, I would say the in Los Angeles, the black community, the black business, everything was very supportive of the civil rights movement, as I remember.
Kind of
an effect
did the black
nationalist
movement and
the
black power movement have on the
kind of what you were doing? Well, that came after the beginnings of the civil rights movement. I don't think anybody would openly oppose. I don't remember Martin Luther King ever. If I remember right, I can't remember who were the ones that dressed in the white. They counter-picketed some action that we had one time, which, you know, we just didn't get anybody else. I don't recall why they would counter-picket. Now, who's the one that got shot? Yeah, I think it had to do with his, and I don't, like I say, I don't remember what the counter picketing was, I don't remember what the reason or what brought that about or anything, but naturally the civil rights movement was always nonviolent, absolutely nonviolent, and you couldn't combine, you know, they felt that they had the answer, and of course, we felt that we had the answer in nonviolence, but I don't recall ever combining an action with any of the more militant. I certainly don't recall. But I don't recall any conflict there. I just remember that. I'm not even sure it was Malcolm X. I remember they had the fight, they wore the fight, and I have no idea why they were. They set up a counter picket line someplace where we were. So they were picketing us. For us being there to picket, and I don't even remember what we were there picketing about either. So it was, Now, remember, the police used to raid. Remember going down there and see where the building was all shot up now. That must have been Malcolm X's son. And they're down there on Graham, MacArthur Street, or something. I can't even remember the name. I went to see the building that was all shot up, so the police had gone in to raid it or something. I don't think they got anybody. I don't remember anybody being killed, although from the bullet holes across the front, I'm not remembering that right either. But I don't remember if that was Malcolm X's thing or another black, more militant. I wish I had sense enough to keep a diary. I wish I had kept a diary then. You have exact dates because there was a lot of things happening that I would like to remember to be more, exact with, but it all just kind of runs together. I don't know what the heads of the group that I was working with, what their reaction was to it. I really don't recall. I know. I think we were all very much opposed to violence and that. I would not have gone out of my way to make contact with them myself because I'm very much opposed to violence. And I think it frightens everyone. That approach to problem solving. And it's certainly with a number of wars that have been fought, I think by now that we should realize that violence does not solve problems. And we certainly, I think, all the people that I was in contact with, all across the United States, I'm sure, were very sincere about solving problems, not creating more. It's some lasting type of peaceful solution for not just the race problem, but, jobs and housing for everybody, all the problems that we've been faced with for years and years and years, and we really haven't made any headway towards a solution. And I think that there was a very sincere effort there, and very sincere people involved in designed and seeking a solution, a very peaceful solution.
How long did you work?
Well, it just sort of dissolved. In fact, the UCRC that I was very much involved with became very inactive when Earl Walters got sick. Of course, I think at that time, maybe the civil rights movement was beginning to fade, and I couldn't tell you what year that was either, unfortunately. Because gains had been made, and people just were, going back to their regular. Although I blame the absolute death of the United Civil Rights Committee on the reason for it being that Earl Walters died, and there was just no one that would carry on that way, that would make the sacrifices, keep something like that alive and moving, which is certainly, I think the same thing happened with an ACP. When the old head died off, there just has not been that. People just don't, maybe there's more to do now. They don't have that dedication, and they just won't give themselves and their time like people did at that period in time.
Do you think the rise of the Black Power
movement, the non-violent movement? I would say not, because they never had I don't think I'm really qualified to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't think that the violent aspect of solving problems ever had the support from black, white, or any other people. It never had the support that the nonviolent movement had. And I feel that a lot of gains were made, and people have a tendency to relax and sit back. And just, why should we go to another meeting? Why should we go to...